Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I gotta tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we gotta do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
Yep, that's very important. There are a lot of things that are important, and that's why AppSats sponsors this show. Hi, I'm Carol the Coach, a.k.a. Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I'm just happy to be on. We had a little technical difficulty. The internet wasn't working, but we got that figured out, and we're back in the studio, and I'm just super happy that we could come on today because we've got such an exciting couple. I mean, they are willing to share everything about how they got through the struggle, how they made it through recovery, how she made it through trauma brain and post-traumatic stress. And so one thing we definitely know is I really want you to listen to this story, because this woman has written 4 books. She's compiled it all together, and it's an amazing trilogy. I don't know if that's 3 or 4 books, but of what she went through and how she worked it out with her husband and how he helped her, and she just got a lot to offer, as does he. So I'm going to go ahead started, because normally, you know me, I talk for about 15 minutes, and then we have our guests come on. But since we got on a little bit late today, I'm just going to go right ahead. I actually have 3 numbers here, so I am going to check in with 0490 and ask, is this Kat? Hi, this is Carol the Coach. Welcome to the show. And we're having trouble hearing you, so we will go to the next caller. This is Carol the Coach. Are you there? Okay, well, we're having some technical difficulties. Are you there?
We are here.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
And there so I am.
There you are. I was waiting for you. I'm glad that you were waiting on me, too. We've had a few technical difficulties at the studio, and, you know, you've been waiting a while, and I really wanted you to be able to talk about betrayal trauma and about your book series. And so, Kat, I'm going to ask you first. You've been on the show before, and you've talked about your books as you wrote them. And now you've decided to compile the 4 books into one. Tell me why you did that.
Well, actually, after I went to therapy for the Partners of Sexual Addicts, I decided to research betrayal trauma, because that just jumped out at me, and he told me a little bit about it, my counselor did, and I wanted to, you know, recover, and I also took it upon myself to get an education about the addiction itself, to know why he was there and, you know, what happened, and the books were published as I wrote them, so I would write the first book, and then it might be 3, 4, 5 months before the reader got the next book. So I did that for a couple of years, and I thought, wow. And it became costly because they were ordering them one at a time. So the series of four was over $65 to order. But having them all in one book, which is 300 pages long, it's only $20. So I wanted it affordable. I want to help people. I have no words to tell you how I feel today versus 3 years ago. I'm a new me. I'm me again. I love it.
Well, I know, and you certainly went through a variety of symptoms. So, I want to applaud you. You know, this is a partner betrayal trauma radio show, and we know that when the partner betrayal happens, it definitely causes trauma brain, and it can cause post-traumatic stress or even complex post-traumatic stress. So I'm going to ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, what percentage are you in your recovery now, and what areas are you still kind of working on?
Well, I'd like to say a little something and then get right to that. I am 70 years old. I'm 70 years old, and I am probably the oldest person on this podcast, but I lived with an addict for 19 years. But I consider myself an extreme case because the stress got so bad, I ended up with a compromised immune system, which almost destroyed my health. Unfortunately, I'm going to give part of the book away. Unfortunately, I did end up divorcing Frank. The reason, the only reason being, I couldn't put my health in jeopardy again because I came very close to dying twice. So taking a chance that he might slide back into the addiction, it just wasn't an option. But we are the best friends in the world, and we're working together, and it's beautiful.
Wow. And that we don't hear very often. We certainly hear about divorce occurring, but we don't hear where the husband and wife work together to create the mission of helping other people to heal. So, Frank, I'm going to be asking you some questions here in a minute, but I'm assuming, Kat, that you know that in lots of ways, for at least 3 to 5 years, you're in recovery from this terrible ordeal. Now, what 1 to 10, what percentage are you in your recovery now? And what area are you working on?
I am definitely an 8. You guys can all clap, but I can't hear you. I'm definitely an 8. Now, I still struggle with the poor body image. And I was really surprised to learn that was my biggest mountain to climb. But what the addict doesn't understand with sexual addiction, it becomes very personal. Because the people the addict is objectifying and the pornography images they're viewing, that's very intimidating. And it makes you feel unloved, inadequate. So that, I'm doing a whole lot better with that, but it's, you know, I'm an 8 with that too. I'm almost there. But another obstacle is the PTSD. And I'm sure, Carol, you don't hear this often, because one would think that the PTSD would override the poor body image. But the PTSD, I researched PTSD for 3 months. I did everything I could. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. But I learned some really valuable things that would save people a lot of time. I'm not saying it'll work for everybody, but it certainly made it easy for me. But I've learned the, let's call it self-talk technique. And each time I'm triggered, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us what the self-talk technique is.
Okay. I do it in my head. I'm not walking around in Walmart talking, but each time I'm triggered, I tell myself it's just a bad memory and not a current danger to my emotional peace. I'm not going to say it works every time, but I'm getting better at it. I would probably say I can get a hold of it 80% of the time. And I'd say that I'm still on guard with Frank because sometimes I expect he's going to lie to me because that's part of the addiction. But his lying, since it became habitual, it's still difficult for me to trust him in that area. But I have to say, I totally trust this man in every other area. You know, we started out as friends, and God saw fit to put us together. There was a plan all along, you know. The recovery is always a process, and I'm proud to say, I'm very proud of my accomplishments so far. So if I can survive, the partners on this podcast will be able to become a victor instead of a victim. I'm an old gal, and I did it, and almost died twice. Well, so.
And I know that, you know, Frank, you obviously have been through a lot with her, and you know, if you've looked at my book, Help Her Heal, that I'm always asking the addict to help their partner heal. And so you've really done a good job of that. Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about your sex addiction and what you had to do to get healthy?
Well, can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Okay. Well, in 2017, I went into a 14-day intensive, me and four other guys. And we were doing recovery work 10 hours a day. So I usually tell people I had 2 years worth of therapy in 2 weeks. But while we were there, they gave us a book on betrayal trauma. But it was more of a clinical book. So as I read the book and we talked about it, I understood somewhat, but I didn't understand the true impact the emotions had. They also had us write a letter to our partners that was supposed to be an attempt at empathy and what we put them through. And then it was sent to the partners. And needless to say, Kat's response pretty much tore that puny attempt to pieces. I think my original letter to her was like one page long, and her response was like a page and a half. Of like those, and you only thought you knew this. This is what it was really like. But when I returned home, I had all this information about addiction. And so I really didn't help her at all for quite some time. I was too focused on my recovery. On the other hand, Kat had done a lot of reading and a lot of research on sex addiction, betrayal trauma, and I could see how that helped her understand me more. She even encouraged me to do the same, but I was still too busy with my recovery. During times of intense discussions, sometimes I would go into shame, which meant I was too busy beating myself up to actually hear what she was saying. And my CSAT told me, he says, if you feel like beating yourself up, find somebody else to do it because they'll know when to stop. And I would beat myself up for days on end. So that was one thing I did during those intense discussions. The other thing I would do was I'd try to control the situation. I would deny, lie, manipulate, gaslight, minimize what she was saying, which is very addictive behavior. And it wasn't until she started writing her books that things started changing. When she had her first draft, she actually asked me to read it, and I read it, and she said, what do you think? I said, you were too kind. And so she went back and started rewriting, and I read the first part again. She said, how do you like that? And I said, well, that's pretty rough, but it was true. But the thing was, when I started reading her book, the emotion just jumped off the page at me. And I knew I'd heard these words before, spoken in anger, rage, pain, but reading them instead of hearing them screamed at me had a bigger impact. I could actually hear the humiliation, the rejection, the betrayal of the person she loved turning away from her. I could feel that running, just jumping off the page at me. I could actually hear the rage and the real hate that she had. And it was right then that I realized I really needed to start learning about betrayal trauma to understand this more.
And what do you, can you remember the book? What was the name of the book?
The name of the book that I had in therapy?
Mm-hmm. The one that, made much more sense.
It was the book I read during the intensive was more of a clinical book, as I said, but in reading her book, in reading what she had written, that was going to be, that's when it started. But she was writing about her pain and how she felt. And again, that I think the thing for me was that when we were having intense discussions and she was screaming this very terrible stuff about me, at me, I wasn't really picking it up because I was too much in shame or I was trying to defend myself. But when I was reading it without all the screaming going on, I could really understand what was being said. And I got a much better understanding of how she really felt just reading it as opposed to hearing it yelled at me. So that made the biggest difference in my life right there is to be able to read it without having someone scream at you. And that really helped me to really understand how she was feeling and really understand the emotional impact of what betrayal trauma actually felt.
Okay, that makes so much sense. And Kat, I'm sure that a lot of your readers have that experience. It validates what they're going through. And if their husbands are lucky enough to read it, like he said, it helps bridge that, what I believe is a normal trauma response and to understand that that is part of partner betrayal, the rage, the fury, the isolation, the sadness, the depression. So, Frank, thanks so much. I'm going to check back in with Kat because I'm wondering, Kat, when you read about post-traumatic stress and you realized that you had PTSD, you said you used that self-talk technique. How long did it take you to recover from PTSD?
I got to jump in here. Frank forgot to mention a book that I bought him that helped him a lot about betrayal trauma, Frank.
Frank? Okay, well,
Frank, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I was going to get to that in a bit.
We'll get to it now. It fits in, you know.
Okay, well, one of the things, I'll say it this way. When I went to counseling, I learned about betrayal trauma and getting a much better understanding about how Kat felt by reading her book and really discovering what her emotions really was. But even with all that under my belt, in the spring of 2019, Kat actually bought me your book, Help Her Heal. And doing the workbook really helped me to get on track with empathy. And I can talk about that now if you'd like to, but...
Well, thank you both. I mean, Kat, thanks for reminding him to mention that, and I didn't know that it was so impactful. You know,
I've been on, this is my third podcast with you, but the first one I went on, I started poking around your website, and I thought, I'm going to getting that book, so.
Well, I do agree that it is a wonderful book for sex addicts to help their partners heal because it explains step by step how to practice empathy. And we know that men aren't that good with empathy. And if you're a sex addict, you know, it's very hard because there's so much shame and guilt. It's hard to empathize with the partner without going into shame and guilt. And so I try to teach it in a way that they can stay out of the guilt and know that they're doing something positive. They're not righting the wrong, but they are definitely trying to make it better. Right, Kat?
Right, and I actually looked through the book myself and I went, bingo. And I said, do the workbook. I was trying desperately to make him understand betrayal trauma. And your book you saved us a whole lot of trouble. You really did.
Well, thank you.
That book was a godsend, hon.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay,
you're the best.
Get back to you guys. Now, there are a few things that you would tell our listeners, I just know, about beginning their program to motivate them to get started with recovery. Because, Kat, you know that a common response from a partner is, why should I have to work so hard? I didn't ask this into my life. Why do I have to do such hard work? So tell our listeners, what can you say to motivate them to get started if they're just dealing with discovery for the first time?
Okay. Well, I can certainly relate to that because I was so hurt and angry when I found out he was an addict, and I couldn't even think straight, let alone help myself. And I want to tell the listeners that pain is real. That pain is real. But when I got to the point where I made the decision that his addiction wasn't going to steal my right to be happy and have a peaceful life, I chose, being key word, I chose to take my power back. And that was the smartest move I ever made. It changed who I was totally. I wanted to find Kat again. But the first and most important thing I had to remember was this was not my fault, and I did nothing to deserve that type of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew, unfortunately, that I was the only one who could undo the emotional damage his addiction caused. So in order to start the process, I needed to you need to think differently about the situation, try to be positive, which is difficult to do. But I stayed with it because I also made the decision to be a victor instead of a victim. Most people starting out early, this is according to Kat, you're in victim mentality. You know, you're laying mm-hmm. in the gutter, you're down on your face, and you're like, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Why am I being so mistreated? So for probably about a month or so, I might cry here, but that's all right. For probably about a month or so, every day, I mentally took myself back to the last time I was happy and peaceful until I reached the point where I became angry because somebody had taken that away from me. Then determination set in, and I was ready to do whatever I had to do to be happy again. And I did it, girl.
Yes,
and
you did. And I just love the fact that you said I chose to take back my power, because I have this Carol the Coach mantra. I heard you said this earlier, according to Kat. Well, I have this Carol the Coach mantra, which is, I won't give anybody the power to make me feel blank. I mean, Eleanor Roosevelt said it best when she said, no one should make you feel inferior without your consent. Well, I really believe that if women say to themselves and even to the perpetrator, you know, I won't give you the power to make me feel angry, or I won't give you the power to make me feel inferior or inadequate or unloved, it really does take back your power. So I'm so pleased that you made that point. Women have more power than they think they do, but it usually devolves on them. Yeah.
Well, I'll say something humorous right now, because while he was in therapy, Kathy was studying. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, he got the unfortunate opportunity to meet his new wife, and she was not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I came back, and he came back, and I'd been studying, and I have researched now for 3 years. I love it now. Mm-hmm. But it was like when you know, I picked him up at the airport, it's like, we're going to dance, dude, and it ain't going to be to a pretty song, because I had it. I made that decision, and I was determined, because when we met and started dating, I was very well adjusted, very confident about myself. You know, I was a very independent woman as well. But
mm-hmm.
I'll get back to what we were talking about. I think the best thing that I did in this whole thing when I started out, you know, we forget to be grateful. So I made a grateful list. I wrote down everything I was grateful for, and each day I would add to it. And I'd forgotten there were so many good things in my life, but the relationship was so bad that I never thought about it. Then I made another list of the bad things in my life, and I was surprised to find out that list was so much shorter. So this exercise really motivated me to move forward and heal.
Well, that's good advice, especially, you know, not only for women that are beginning a recovery journey, but, you know, there are women that are 1 and 2 years into this, and their brain has finally calmed down, and they're trying to figure out how to proceed. And it always comes back to what makes you feel happy. What do you need to do to feel more fulfilled and to not make this betrayal trauma a 24/7 experience in your brain? And
yeah,
you
become single focused.
Yeah, your books really helped you to heal. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I learned along the way, absolutely. And there were times I stopped writing for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, you know, and start applying the knowledge. I was writing my books and researching, I was trying different things in between. If something failed, I told about it in my book, you know. But the old saying, you have to make a mess to create a masterpiece. I kept remembering that. That was a hot mess, girl.
Well, and you know, I really believe in metaphor, so I like that metaphor. And Frank, I know there was a period in your life when she was a hot mess and you actually asked your therapist something like, when's she going to get over this or when's it ever going to end? And what did your CSAT tell you?
He said when she knows you get it.
Amen.
And that, I didn't like that, but I knew he was right. But a couple of other things I was just thinking of is, one of the things that really helped me understand betrayal trauma, it was reading her book, which is called The Porch Series, and understanding that the emotions she were going through were real, they were intense, they were like poison she had to get out of herself. And the other thing I learned about betrayal trauma, about helping in betrayal trauma, was that during intense discussions, I need to be very present. And that meant I had to stop shaming myself, which wasn't easy, because when I would shame myself, I would shut down. And I also learned that defending myself was like the worst thing I could do, because in defending myself, I was basically minimizing her feelings. I was telling her she didn't have the right to feel that way. In other words, I was telling her she was wrong. And this was difficult to conquer, too, because anytime a person's accused of doing something, they're going to defend themselves. But I had lied so much. So even when I was telling the truth, she couldn't believe me. Why would she? And I had to realize that shaming myself was about me. And so I had to get to a place where I was emotionally present, and I wasn't taking it personally. I was being there for her, which was difficult to do when you're hearing all these terrible things about yourself, which were all true. But she actually helped me here, because she got to a point where she was able to separate the addict from the man, which was quite a gift for me.
That was huge.
It helped me to realize her anger was about the addictive behavior. Now, that didn't absolve me from responsibility from that behavior, but in some way I was able to separate myself and realize I can be present and not shame or defend myself. Now, I failed a lot, but I got better over time. I remember during one discussion, she actually stopped me, and she said, "You're letting the addict take over." And she was right. I stopped. I reset myself, and I said this. I said, "I can completely understand the way you feel, and if I was in your position, I'd say the same thing, and I'd feel the same way." And she said, "Thank you," and suddenly the conversation became very productive. Another important thing that my CSAT told me was, wherever I'm at in my recovery, she's at least 6 months behind. And I remember that saying several times, twice I remember right offhand, "You give me too much credit." In other words, I'm not as far along in my recovery as you think. Now, that doesn't mean she wasn't working on recovery. She's actually working very hard, but I have to remember that her emotional scars are very large and very deep, and it's going to take time and a lot of healing. And it's not easy, but it's worth it. And then there's a whole thing about PTSD, too. Lord, help me.
Sorry. He went through some really hard times with me. Boom, explosion.
Yeah. But the biggest thing I learned about PTSD was in those moments of PTSD, it most likely had nothing to do with what I had said or done. But it was a traumatic event from the past that suddenly had recurred to her, and she was back in that situation. She was very good at announcing. She'd say, I'm having a PTSD moment. And my job was to say, what can I do to help? And most of the time, there was nothing I could do to help. The first time, I remember the first time completely, where I asked her, I said, what can I do to help? And she said, you need to leave, which I did. But the addictive part of me wanted to stay and help fix her. But I knew I needed to leave. And it took her 3 days to get past that first one. But over the last 3 years, she's gotten really good at it. She still has them some occasionally. She deals with them very well most of the time. Unfortunately, I had to realize that what was going on most likely had nothing to do with me in that moment. It was something that had triggered her into a past experience. Mm. So there was no reason for me to be in shame or take it personally. My job was to be present, be patient, and help her with whatever she needed.
And empathy.
Well,
very much so.
That's the foundation of empathy, is listening to what the needs are of the partner and then following through. And you know, it's interesting because partners 10, 20 years ago were considered codependents, or they were considered co-addicted. And what we at APSAC thoroughly believe is that partners are not necessarily codependent or co-addicts. You know, I mean, we all can have but it's not an automatic. And yet what I am finding with sex addicts that want to help their partners heal is that they are codependent. And so they will put their own needs in front of what the partner is asking because they think that she needs what they think that she needs, when really she knows what she needs and she'll be able to tell you. And it takes a courageous man to walk away and listen and follow through with what the partner needs. Does that make sense?
Oh, well said. Beautiful. Yes.
Well, okay, can I jump in here and talk about empathy and listening for a minute since you mentioned it?
Yes, you can.
Well, those are two difficult things for me to learn. And because of some traumatic events that happened in my early adulthood, I had shut down emotionally. And let me give you a little bit more of my background. I currently attend 5 to 6 SAA phone meetings a week. I co-moderate 2 of them. I'm currently sponsoring 10 different guys, which is a big load. But what I tell most of my guys is one of the things is that, and this is just my analogy for them, is by the time a woman is 30 to 40 years old, they'd have what I call a PhD in emotional maturity. And us men were kind of in junior, when most of us guys are in junior high. But with learning more about betrayal trauma, and again, using your book, Help Her Heal, and reading Kat's book on the porch series, that really helped me a lot in that whole thing. And I started rediscovering my emotions. But still, even today, they're kind of confusing at times. They get all mixed up. I don't know if I'm angry or frustrated or anxious or what it is. It takes a while to sort them all out. But I found for me, learning empathy is like playing the piano. It's something I have to practice intentionally. That's the whole point, intentionally. And so sometimes when we're having some, I will say, I don't think we really have any intense or heated discussions much anymore.
Well, that depends on you, my love.
Well, that's true. That's very true. But in the beginning, I had to actually tell myself mentally, listen to her emotion and respond with empathy. I was actually telling myself mentally to do those things. I wasn't very good in the start, but I got better over time. But the other thing I know is with all the stuff that I do within the SAA program, I hear this topic come up at least once a week in meetings. And that tells me there's a lot of guys out there who are having difficulty with it. And I've actually mentioned your book, Help Her Heal, numerous times to some of the guys. And most of the guys who got it said they really helped them. So for me, listening or empathy is a big deal. And listening is another skill that's hard for most guys. You know, most of us, especially us who have an addiction, we're listening pretty much in the beginning with what can we do to get out of this. We're listening with the intent to respond. We're really not listening to try to understand how they're feeling. And that takes a major switch for both of us guys, because we're not really good at listening to begin with, and to really actively listen, to sit there and kind of shut our minds down. And one thing I told myself in the past is, how would a good friend of hers respond to this? And a good friend wouldn't try to defend themselves. A good friend wouldn't try to defend the other person. A good friend would listen and listen to their emotion, listen to the content, listen to their emotion, and respond to them. Like, even something like, man, that must suck. Just something where you're listening to what they're saying and you're listening to their emotion. But again, that's not easy for the addict to do in the beginning, and it's a struggle. It really is. One of the two things I tell the guys that I sponsor, I said, never miss an opportunity to shut up. Just listen. And the other go ahead.
That's the main goal of communication, is listening, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And the other thing I usually tell them is, the longer you talk, the worse it's going to get. Let them get it out.
Well, exactly. And now I just want to say one thing, because if our listening audience has not heard Frank say it clearly enough, he got a lot out of his wife's books. Now, they're not together anymore, but they still work as a team and try to help couples in recovery. I want to mention that her series of books are called, is it called the Front Porch Series? And then
the Porch Series, yeah. Each book has, I relate it to porches somehow. You'll have to read them to figure it out. It's kind of fun. Yeah.
Oh, but
the Porch Series.
Yes. Like, one of her books is called Sweeping the Porch. The next book is called My Porch Light. Then they're Sitting on the Porch Swing, and then Get Off the Porch.
Can I quickly do a real fast little thing?
Absolutely.
Get Off My Porch was when I asked him to leave. We were separated for about 6 months before I did the divorce. So that was, Get Off My Porch was when I asked him to leave. I just emotionally, and my health was bad. I couldn't handle it anymore. The second one, is Sitting on the Porch Swing, is when we came back together as friends, because that's how you meet people. A neighbor might come over, you sit, you talk, you get to know each other. I never knew the real Frank. The third one, Sweeping the Porch, is about boundaries. It's all about boundaries. It's like you got to get that stuff away from you and out of your way so you can see a path forward clearly. And then My Porch Light is, the light is bright, the relationship is good, and everybody's nice and comfy.
Mm-mm-mm. Yes, I had a feeling that Get Off My Porch was about the separation that needed to occur. And sometimes partners need that to happen so that their brain can rest. And I'm sure that did help your brain to rest. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, it's that first book is a tough read. It's a tough
mm-hmm.
read. It took me quite a while to write that, in between tears and wanting to throw something. But it talks a lot about PTSD and my compromised immune system. It talks about a lot of the arguments we had, some flashbacks I had. And then the books get softer as we go along, because we're healing. And we were able to look at each other. And I know that there's so much good in Frank. He's a good man. He's a good man. And once I learned to, and I told him one time, I said, I did not divorce you. I divorced the addict. So, you know, that the books, as we go along, you know, I'm learning, he's learning, and we were able to really just clear our minds and work it together. And there's a divorce, but we have a beautiful ending.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You're proof that you don't have to stay together to work together and to love together, and that's what you're doing right now. Now, I've got a couple of other questions for you. First of all, Kat, how can they find your book?
Oh, it's on Amazon, Books. It's pretty much everywhere.
Okay, and we have
it's been newly released just a couple of weeks ago.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have somebody on the line, and I'd like to take the caller and see if they're available. Hi, this is Carol, the coach, and you're listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio. Do you have a question for Frank or for Kat? Well, that sounds like they don't. Okay, I just wanted to make sure they got their question answered if they had something. So let me just ask you, as we begin to wind up the show, obviously you guys are working hard and you're making a real big difference in the lives of other couples. And, you know, it sounds like, Frank, you're talking with your therapist, you're talking with your groups, you're enlightening them about partner betrayal, correct?
That is true. And it's interesting. Actually, I just took on my 10th sponsee not too long ago, and he's just starting through step one. And it's interesting to always hear the stories from the guys, because they're different stories, but they're very similar. And one of the first things I ask them is, how's your partner doing? Because I want them to realize that not only do they have recovery to work through themselves, but they can also help their partner heal also. And to just be concerned with your recovery is a disservice to your relationship. And there's a lot of good stuff the addict can do to help the partner, and a lot of good stuff the partner can do to the addict. In fact, I'll give you a good example of something that happened not too long ago. We were working a project together at Kat's house, and she was talking to me about part of the project, and I was sitting at the table thinking about the project. And she looked at me, she said, are you listening to me? And I said, no, I was thinking about this part of the project. And she looks at me and she says, well, you are a work in progress. Now, Now 2 years ago, 2 years ago, she would have got incredibly upset about that because I wasn't listening to her. But I just wanted to show the people that, you know, there's growth in this. And she's grown so much in what she's done and how she's recovered in her process, too. But that's what I always try to tell the guys that I talk to. I talk to a lot of guys. Believe me, I talk to a lot of guys. I've actually been on the phone for as much as 6 hours in one day. But it's all the same thing. It's always like, don't forget your partner in this recovery process, because you can be a great help. And one of the first things I tell them is, stop lying now. And for a lot of the addicts, though, they've been doing this for so long in so many different ways, it's very difficult for them to stop that. But they really need to do that, because I always tell them, I said, it's better to tell them the truth and deal with the consequences than tell them a lie and then deal with the lie and the consequences. You know, one of the things, and one of the acronyms we always use for fear is face everything and recover. And so they have to face up to what they've done or what they've said. Don't lie about it, because that just makes it so much worse. Believe me, it's so much worse with that. And I've heard quite a few guys tell me that their partner has told them, I can deal with the truth, but I can't deal with lies. So lying is a huge deal for the addict, and that's the biggest thing they can give to their partner right away is honesty and the truth. If you're going to give your partner anything, do that. In fact, in one of the books we use in SAA and AA, it talks about rigorous honesty, not brutal honesty, but rigorous honesty, to where we have to stay honest as much as we can. And I know it's difficult for the addict to do that, and it's so scary to tell the truth, because it's one of those things where, like, if I tell her the truth, she's going to get really mad. Well, if you don't tell her the truth, she's going to get really mad twice as much.
And it's going to make me not trust you.
Even more.
The whole thing is earning my trust.
Yes.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
Oh, no, that's good. That's good. That's fine. I'm done.
Absolutely. And so you have made it sounds like, your lifetime work, both of you, to disseminate information that's going to help the partner heal. And, you know, again, 20, 30 years ago, they were doing a program where you work on your healing, she works on her healing, and maybe in a couple years you guys can come together and work on the relationship. And as you well know, that model doesn't work.
Well, actually, the initial idea of separating was he, of course, did not want to go. We live 5 minutes apart, so he definitely did not want to go. And I told him, I said, we're going to be in each other's way, because mm-hmm. I'm going to be walking around here wondering what he's done or doing. He's going to be walking around on eggshells because I was, yeah, had my cat claws out a lot. But, you know, to work on it, and then you start communicating about, I learned this today about you. I learned this today about the addict. I learned this, is it true? You communicate, and you both learn each side. But I want to, when we're talking about betrayal trauma, I'm going to tell a book here, The Cognitive Behavioral Coping Skills and Workbook for PTSD. Mm-hmm. That book right there, that you've heard of that, I'm sure. Matthew Toll. And, yeah. I worked that workbook. I'd hit the fence once outside, but I've worked this workbook. And this helped me so much. Much like Help Her Heal helped Bill, that was his workbook. This was mine, but I had to get one for PTSD because it was really bad. So that's a good helps too for people. But you know, we both I can speak for Frank because we talk about it all the time. We know our job is to help. We know our job is to save relationships if we can. I'm not going to sit here and say we did not save our relationship. We did. We did not save the marriage. But we say our relationship's stronger than it's ever been now. Well, you just have to learn about each other.
I love that. You guys are an inspiration. And I want our listening audience to know, if they need to get a hold of you, if they have a question about the book, if they need a little inspiration, how can they do that?
Well, I normally don't give out my email address, but I haven't the last two shows I did before, but I think I'll do that today.
Okay. And that would be?
Yeah. It's lowercase cc200@sbcglobal.net.
Well, thank you, Kat. Thank you very much. And how about you, Frank? Are you willing to give yours out?
Well, the easiest way to get a hold of me, and I prefer this, but I will give up my email if somebody's really interested. Not that I'll do that. The easiest way to find me is to participate in the SAA meetings. And the way a guy can do that is to go on to the saa-recovery.org site, saa-recovery.org site, and they have a list of all meetings. And I attend a lot of meetings. Most of the meetings I attend on the phone start with 857, 857-232-0476.
Whoa, slow down there.
The phone number for those meetings, the ones I attend mostly, is actually called A Journey to Hope, SAA.org. And I'm very strongly affiliated with that group. And again, the phone number is 857-232-0476. They are phone meetings like this one, but there's a passcode, but that's why I say get on the saa-recovery.org site, saa-recovery.org site, and it lists all the meetings, and I'm on meetings. The only day I usually don't attend is a Thursday meeting, but I'm on all the major meetings during the week. I actually co-moderate one that's 10 o'clock on 10 o'clock p.m. Central Time, and it's actually called a newcomers meeting, and I co-moderate that meeting a lot. Every 4 weeks I co-moderate, I'm on it every week. But I will give out my email address. My email address is wclark98@sbcglobal.net.
Excellent. Well, thank you
Let me do one more thing. I only take communications from men.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's not a co-ed.
Well, and, you know, that's one thing partners have a problem with. They really like the meetings to be separate. And that makes a lot of sense when they've been through what they've been through. So, guys, Frank and Kat, thank you so much. And good luck to both of you.
We don't need luck. We're doing well.
Good point. You take care and make it a great week.
Oh, okay. You too. And Carol, God bless you. You're the best. You just help so many people. You have no idea.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And that was Kat Clark and her ex-husband, Frank, and obviously her book series is very well done. And like she said, it is just very affordable. So go to Amazon, take a look at that. And again, I feel so honored to be with you today. I'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio through APSATS.org, the premier partner, betrayal partner, sensitive program in the world.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.